This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The long overdue removal of the service chiefs and their replacement did not elicit any excitement among majority of Nigerians because nothing really has changed. Many Nigerians have given up on the president's inexplicable determination to keep the old service chiefs.
That was Nigerian human rights lawyer and social advocate Frank Tai-Tai on the mixed reaction to President Buhari's replacement of military service chiefs. Details coming up. Also, a bus and a truck collision kills 53 people in Cameroon. And to curb the spread of COVID-19, the United States adds travelers from South Africa to its banned list. All these and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. President Muhammadu Buhari has replaced Nigeria's top military security chiefs amid demands by the public and major stakeholders for improvements in the fight against terrorism. Gifta Gariga from Abuja, Nigeria, found conflicting reviews on the action.
In a statement yesterday, Buhari thanked the outgoing chiefs for what he called overwhelming achievements in their efforts at bringing enduring peace to the country. Their sack followed outcries in recent years over the president's inaction to replace the service chiefs due to the crisis and insecurities in the country. Meanwhile, Nigerians have reacted to the change. The head of Transparency International Nigeria, Anwar Musa Rafsanjani, commended the president for listening to the public and urged the new service chiefs not to disappoint.
We expect the new service chiefs to depoliticize their assignment, a situation whereby the army in particular will be issuing statements attacking and condemning media and civil society for exposing human rights abuses.
A private security and defense consultant, Group Captain Shehu Garuba Sadiq, said the new security chiefs are expected to inject fresh perspectives into the security sector.
We have to put in mind that the Nigerian military is still suffering from lack of resources, such as manpower and also equipment. So definitely changing the service chiefs might bring in new idea.
Sadiq urged Nigerians' allies to donate equipment to support the security teams in the fight against insurgencies. A human rights lawyer and social advocate, Frank Tete, said the dismissals were long overdue.
The long overdue removal of the service chiefs and their replacement did not elicit any excitement among majority of Nigerians because nothing really has changed. Many Nigerians had given up on the president's inexplicable determination to keep the old service chiefs.
Dr. Moses Ajeka, a security expert and a retired senior police officer, advised the service chiefs to work hard to meet public expectations.
What the country needs at this moment in time is professionalism, strategy to reduce the insecurity rate across the country. And not only that, we must be sincere, honest, without bias, because if we don't do what is expected of us, we are going back to square one.
The military has been engaged in a running battle with Boko Haram insurgents and terrorists, with no evidence of winning the fight in sight. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga.
A bus collided with a truck early today in Cameroon, killing at least 53 people and injuring 21 others. The Associated Press reports the accident occurred around the village of Sanchu in the western part of the country. The governor of the western region told reporters that a speeding truck illegally transporting fuel crashed into the 70-seat bus, sparking an uncontrollable fire. Road accidents are common in Cameroon. The government blames reckless drivers and the poor state of vehicles, while drivers blame bad road conditions. For most of the past year, Africa appeared to be doing better in containing the coronavirus pandemic than many wealthier nations. However, as South Africa and several other nations on the continent undergo a surge in infections, many experts think Africa's lower numbers may actually reflect lower testing rates, systemic underreporting, and other factors. VOA's Adam Phillips has this report.
Professor Jaap Boom is the regional representative for Epicenter Africa, the research arm of Doctors Without Borders, or Médecins Sans Frontières. Speaking from Cameroon, Boom said there are several reasons why COVID-19 statistics have tended to skew low on the continent.
To start with, most countries were actually targeting the people who had symptoms. While we've understood that in Africa, up to 80% of the positive COVID patients are asymptomatic. So there was a bunch of people that were not being screened because they were not asymptomatic.
Boom and his colleagues are trying to determine the actual prevalence of exposure to the virus by taking large numbers of blood samples in places like outdoor markets, large workplaces, and within extended families.
So we have started a survey in Congo, we'll be doing in Senegal, Cameroon, quite a number of other countries. And that will give us a better picture of how those countries have been affected.
The results have been sobering. For example, in Yaoundé, Cameroon's capital, the percentage of people known to have been exposed to the virus has risen 32%, while in Cape Town, South Africa, the number has soared as high as 60%. Those numbers dwarf the percentage of people testing positive on the PCR test, the most reliable test for active infection, and in antigen tests that detects coronavirus antibodies in the system, which indicates prior exposure. But many Africans are not being tested at all. That could be because they lack the transportation or the time to get to a health facility, or because many health facilities do not test for COVID-19 if a patient shows no symptoms, such as coughing, shortness of breath, fever, and the loss of taste or smell.
So even if a test is done, maybe the data doesn't get to the level it needs to for the reporting to happen.
Tiffany Harris is Associate Professor of Epidemiology at Columbia University Medical Center's ICAP Global Health Group in New York and the director of its Department of Strategic Information.
South Africa, which does have a much stronger surveillance system compared to the rest of the continent, we are seeing large number of cases, and we have for some time. That's probably also a sign that the other countries, there's undercounts there. In neighboring countries like Zimbabwe, for example, the cases are dramatically increasing there. And Zambia is also seeing a surge in cases.
Keeping reliable COVID infection rates is key, but so are accurate death records, which require testing, autopsies, and proper facilities. Many countries in Africa do not automatically register deaths. In those that do, registrations may be delayed months.
And so a common approach is to look at what often referred to as all-cause mortality. In the absence of something else that's going on, if we're seeing big rises in all-cause mortality over the same year, you can surmise that it's probably either direct effects of COVID or even indirect effects of COVID. Because that's the other thing you have to keep in mind. If there's a countrywide lockdown and someone is not able to or is uncomfortable traveling to go seek care, they may not get a diagnosis or treatment. Even if it's not due to COVID, they might die because they're not getting care for other things. I think there's sort of the longer term fix that's needed of strengthening, you know, vital event system. There should be a real push right now to make sure every death is documented and the cause is identified to the extent possible.
Harris says that to gain control of the pandemic, Africa will need better surveillance and testing and rigorous contact tracing, along with lab support and the widespread distribution of vaccines. She adds that the recruitment of healthcare workers to educate the public and treat the sick is also crucial. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
U.S. President Joe Biden has added travelers from South Africa to a banned list. The move to curb the spread of COVID-19 in America takes effect Saturday and does not affect U.S. citizens. South Africa is the worst hit country in Africa with more than 1.4 million confirmed coronavirus cases so far. Scientists there have also identified a more contagious variant of the virus. Reporter Vicky Stark got details on the travel ban from Robert Miarkel, spokesperson for the U.S. Embassy.
Merkel says the proclamation signed by Biden also continues travel restrictions on foreign nationals who've been present in the United Kingdom, Ireland, the Schengen area, Brazil, China, and Iran.
Under these restrictions, foreign nationals who have been present in any of these countries, including South Africa, within 14 days prior to travel to the United States will not be allowed entry. So this is not a measure imposed on South African citizens only. Rather, it's any non-US citizen who has been in any of these countries, including South Africa.
Merkel says Biden acted on the advice of his medical and scientific teams.
With the pandemic worsening and more contagious variants emerging throughout the world, this isn't the time to be lifting restrictions on international travel. The United States is also adding South Africa to the restricted list on the advice of our medical and COVID-19 teams in light of a contagious variant spreading in South Africa.
Merkel says the proclamation will be reviewed monthly.
It will be up to President Biden, based on his team's recommendations, to continue, modify, or terminate these restrictions. The proclamation does not restrict the ability of U.S. citizens or legal permanent residents of the United States to travel to the U.S., though as of today, all travelers to the United States must provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test to airlines prior to departure.
Merkel says the proclamation does allow for exceptions, with information to be posted soon on the website whitehouse.gov. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Incessant rains over the past couple of weeks have caused flooding in parts of Zimbabwe, threatening to derail this year's harvest. Eddie Gando gives us more on the story.
With weather forecast predicting continuous rains for the next 2 weeks, experts are raising concerns about crop damage. Though initially welcome after repeated droughts eroded food security, experts now fear that the rains are exacerbating the numbers of hungry citizens. With COVID-19 putting people out of work and killing their income, the country's economic recession has led organizations such as the World Food Program to project that 8.6 million people, over half the country's population, would be food insecure by the year end. Claire Neville, the spokesperson for the organization in Zimbabwe, says hunger is set to surge in the country.
Some 5.6 million people are projected to be food insecure between January and March 2021. Nearly half, including more than a third of the rural population, are expected to be facing crisis or emergency levels of hunger, up from 2.6 million people a year ago. We estimate in WFP that half of all urban dwellers, or roughly 2.2 million people, go to bed hungry right now. And we know that a further 1.2 million food insecure people would be much worse off today without the life-saving food assistance from WFP and its partners over the past year.
Agricultural experts say excessive rains can flush out nutrients such as nitrates and phosphates, which the crops need. And this is especially the case for smallholder farmers planting in sandy soil, which constitutes 70% of the arable land in Zimbabwe. According to the problems, ammonium nitrate fertilizer, which replaces leached nitrogen from the soil, is in short supply. Ed Momzenda, an agronomist with Windmill, one of the country's largest fertilizer companies, weighs in on the situation.
Most of the AN that we use in Zimbabwe, we are importing it. The most of it is some import. It must be from Asia. I cannot say whether it's because of Forex or it's because of the effects of COVID, but I would need to think these two factors might be the ones contributing to this shortage of supply of AN in the country, and as well as urea. All I can say is, especially for our company, each and every week we are receiving some AN and as well as some urea, and we are also feeding it into our depots all over the country. But then the demand is too high compared to what we are supplying to them.
Mzenda says that the loss of soil nutrients through leaching is not the only problem farmers face this season.
In areas, for example, in Marondera, which is Marsh East, mostly our soils are sand. So in these areas, yield is going to be very low, of course, due to leaching. In areas with heavy soils, there is less leaching, but of course, because their soils are heavy, weed pressure can also be high.
Experts such as Mzenda say Zimbabwe's soils generally have low fertility and require inorganic fertilizer and organic fertilizer and mulching to counter the degradation. Government last year launched the conservation farming program called Fumfuza nationwide in a bid to curtail the impact of the expected annual drought season. The program involves zero land tillage and the planting of crops in basins intended to capture rain. Lawrence Mjere, an agronomist with Harvest Plus, an organization that works with farmers promoting biofortified crops, says the expected gains from the conservation farming program look all but obliterated.
Yeah, the Fumfuza concept was a noble one because the country had experienced successive droughts. However, given the current situation, the Fumfuza is now causing some adverse effects also because it's continuously raining. Farmers need to adapt and adopt other technologies that can help the current situation. We are now recommending our farmers actually assess their fields and adjust the concept to ridge their crops and drain the water out of the fields.
Experts say the harvest hangs in the balance as extreme weather, swinging from severe drought to massive rainfall, indicates that something has gone awry with the climate. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Zimbabwe.
Wildlife experts in Botswana are doing a flyover over the Okavango Delta after the discovery of at least five more mysterious elephant deaths. Experts have not ruled out a waterborne bacteria that was found to have killed more than 330 elephants last year, and at first baffled experts. From Habrone, Botswana, Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Regional Wildlife Coordinator Dikamatso Ntsebe said his office received reports of five dead elephants in the Muremi Game Reserve. The reserve is located within the Okavango Delta. Ntsebe said the animals were collapsing knees first. Some carcasses were fresh while others are 2 weeks old. Ntsebe ruled out poaching as the elephants' tusks were still intact. The Department of Wildlife and National Parks was expected to comb the area possible for more carcasses. Ntsebe said they will collect samples to determine the cause of death. Last year, a mass die-off affected 330 elephants in the delta, with prolonged investigations concluding that natural toxins were to blame. However, wildlife experts said there could be links between the recent deaths and those from last year. Biologist Eric Ferrian said there were similarities in the way the elephants were dying.
If you look at the symptoms and if you look at the rainfall conditions, then I think it is very, very important that we do not ignore a possible link between the mortalities of these elephants and the elephants that died last year in the same areas.
He rejected findings of a recent international study led by University of Pretoria Professor Ruth van Eyde. The research concluded the mass die was the result of fencing in of their mammals, which results in stress.
Unfortunately, we will never know the exact cause of death. Government has announced that it is cyanobacteria. I have a fundamental problem with that because it only affected elephants and none of the other, even hindgut fermenters that are using the water. It was very, very localized, and it involved 350 elephants out of a population that ranges between 12,000 and 18,000.
Conservationist Map Ive said the recent deaths are unusual.
I have seen images, but, you know, I have not seen pathology or any scientific studies. This is an unusual incident, and I imagine we will find further carcasses. The cause of death can only be established by scientists, and then based on that, we can take preventative measures or mitigate.
Investigations into last year's incident dragged for months, with Botswana blaming COVID-19 travel restrictions for the delays. The Southern African country has the world's largest elephant herd at more than 130,000. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni, Botswana.
Somali lawmakers are demanding an explanation from President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo after allegations surfaced that Somali troops sent to train in Eritrea have been secretly fighting and dying in Ethiopia's Tigray conflict. Farmajo's office has denied the claim, which was put forth by a former National Intelligence Deputy Chief and parents of troops who are allegedly missing. Mohamed Kayi reports from Mogadishu.
The parents of Somali troops allegedly missing in Eritrea following military training say they fear their children were secretly sent to fight in Ethiopia's Tigray conflict. They protested on Friday in Mogadishu, calling on President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo government to provide information on their whereabouts. Mariam Ahmed is the mother of a Somali soldier sent to Eritrea over a year ago. She says mothers like her haven't heard from their boys since they left for training. Ahmed says their sons are missing since November 2019 and they have no contact from them since then. We don't eat, drink or sleep due to their unknown situations, he says. We urgently need their information, says Ahmed, and calling on President, the Prime Minister and all government officials to tell us where our sons are and whether they are dead or alive. The parents' concerns were raised after former deputy of Somalia's National Intelligence and Security Agency, Abdisalan Yusuf Guled, this month claimed more than 370 Somali troops had died fighting in Tigray. Guled provided no direct evidence for his claims made to Somali media. Ethiopia and Somali officials have denied that Somali troops fought in the Tigray conflict. Somalia's Information Minister Osman Dube called the claims baseless. He says they want to clarify about this baseless information, which is based on political interests, on the alleged deployment of Somali troops training in Eritrea to the front line in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Dube says they have never received any requests from Addis Ababa to support their military in Tigray operation. Nonetheless, a Somali parliamentary committee has demanded an explanation from President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo on the whereabouts of the Somali troops sent to Eritrea. The Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee called on the head of state to dispatch a fact-finding mission to Asmara for an investigation. Some Somali lawmakers say there is likely a reasonable explanation for the lack of communication between the troops and their families. Dahir Amin Jesso is a lawmaker and a member of the Security Committee. The training for the new recruits in Eritrea commenced following the pause from coronavirus, he says. That is the reason why they stayed in that country for a long time without any contact. Amin says they hope the troops will return to their loved ones more patriotic when they are done defending their nation. It was not immediately clear if Farmajo will agree to account for the Somali troops sent to Eritrea or if they will be allowed to contact their families to calm fears about their safety. Hamid Kahiye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Zimbabwe's High Court today released journalist Hapoel Chinono on bail after 3 weeks in jail, his third detention in 5 months. Chinono is one of the biggest critics of President Emmerson Mnangagwa's administration, accusing it of corruption and human rights abuses. Chinono says his repeated imprisonments are harassments by a government rattled by his social media posts exposing alleged corruption. In the latest case, according to press reports, Chinono was arrested for posting a report that police killed an infant while enforcing lockdown rules. Police later said the information was false and the baby was alive. Chinono faces a fine or up to 20 years in prison if convicted of publishing a false story. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat and dombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.